Chapter 29. A Fire Born. As with her first journey, Ivanel had to use some spells and pick her way carefully to get through the Drow army now flanking House Beenri. Their positioning was no accident, she now understood more clearly, and that only reminded her of the urgency and critical nature of these next few hours, or perhaps minutes. When she arrived finally at Matron Mother Quenthel's side, she found the Beenri camp astir, soldiers and priestesses preparing the expected battlefield, and notably, spending as many recourses securing their flanks and rear guard as their forward positions, the west, where they expected Matron Jindia to be. "What word?" Quenthel asked her. Mirinel, Minolin Fay, and all of the other Beenri priestesses were there with Quenthel, with the notable exception of Sosumtu. "Where is Matron Zirith and Matron Beertin?" "They are with us," Quenthel assured her, but her voice did not relate the confidence she obviously tried to put forth. "They will do what is best for them," Ivanel said. "Loyalty will play only a small part." It became obvious that Quenthel couldn't disagree with that harsh reality. "Perhaps we should reconsider," she said. "Matron Jindia's case of Lolth's great favor is apparent to many others. Perhaps they are correct in their assessment." "But you and I know better now," Ivanel answered. "He showed us the truth." She pointed to Kimuriel, who stood a short distance away, heavily and restrictively guarded, she noted, by Beenri soldiers. "Do we?" Quenthel asked, her resignation clear. "Or does it matter? If we are hopeless here in our truth, then what purpose does it serve? Do we fight half, perhaps even seven of the 10 greatest drow houses? House Beenri has faced such possibilities for millennia," Ivanel rightfully pointed out. "But here, away from our house and defenses, and with Matron Jindia commanding an army of hundreds of driders and hundreds of demons, she alone is our match, I expect. With the others, with Barriss and Delarmco." Ivanel held up her hand, her eyes going to the distance, for she felt then a tremor beneath her feet, tiny at first, but growing. "The Primordial?" Mirinel asked with great concern. "Is the beast breaking free?" "Matron Jindia," Kimuriel O'Blodra called from the side. "Her running driders are shaking the ground." All eyes went to Ivanel and Quenthel. "We should try again, and immediately," Ivanel suggested. "If we fail, then that is the will of Lolth, it would seem, and we will still have time to make our ultimate choice." Quenthel mulled on that for a bit. Ivanel knew what she was thinking, for they shared the pertinent memories here, recollections from a time long past, 2,000 years and more, in the fledgling days of Menzo Berenzon. The stark difference could not be dismissed, seeing that without, as Kimuriel had noted, the sequential effect was so dramatic that Ivanel and Quenthel could not ignore it. And so it was hope and not fear that drove the Matron Mother forward when she said, "All priestesses and wizards in line to support us." To some nearby sentry she ordered, "Go to House Doerden and House Fay Branch, quickly. Tell the matrons to send us all of their wizards and priestesses. Tell them to come and join in this." "The matrons won't come," Ivanel told Quenthel when they headed back for their respective trees at the end of the wide trail that spilled onto the meadow. "And their aid, if any, will be thin." "I know," Quenthel replied. "If we fail, they can deny participation," Ivanel warned. "That will hardly matter if we fail," Quenthel said. "But if we succeed, they will be more wedded to House Beenri, and will deign to show it, to forego the wrath of the victorious Matron Mother." They parted then, and Ivanel gave silent approval to her aunt. Her invitation was putting Matron Beertin, and particularly the wavering Matron Zirith, into a tight box. They took their places at their respective trees, each supported by a bevy of priestesses and wizards. With a shared nod, they again began to weave. Little seemed to come of their efforts. The ground began to shake more noticeably under their feet. Sweating and exhausted, Catti Bree tried to put aside the acute pain and her very real fears that the Primordial had damaged her coming child. She tried to put aside the critical situation outside of this room, where the dwarves of Gontalgrim fought for their very existence against seemingly overwhelming odds. She tried to sift through the confusion of Ivanel's request and Zack's clarification, and that led her back to Drizzt, her Drizzt, the love of her life. More than anything at all, that settled Catti Bree. The memory of her husband pushed the pain away, threw any fears aside, and gave her the strength she needed both for this birth and more, much more. She whispered the words Ivanel had given to Coppetta, and Coppetta to her. She whispered the incantation as she blew in short breaths to push the pain away. And there, as the magic began to execute, she found something, something wonderful, something beautiful. The beauty of creation, of a life coming forth. And in that creation, power as the woman had never known before. She sent her magical voice out far and wide, like an announcement of the birth, to bolster the dwarves and their allies, to shake their enemies. She had no specifics to add to that simple message to Riamer at first, unlike when Matron Malice had blasted the room in House Hanet to paralyze the priestesses. Not at first. Brother Afa Frenfir knew that he was lost, deliciously so. He had come to this spiritual state to escape the lethal bite of a blade, and then determined to find Drizzt, but now, all of that was gone from him, as were any thoughts of returning to his physical body, of being alive in any sense of the word he had ever known. For now he was alive, more than ever. Now he knew truth and eternity and the beauty of everything. And he could be a part of it. He was a part of it, and that was good. Any grounding he had to the world, he had left behind, wisped away to almost nothingness. Almost. For then Afa Frenfir heard a voice, sweet and strong. He knew it to be Catti Bree, sweet Catti Bree, powerful Catti Bree. He heard her call, heard her announcement, felt her determination, her sheer force of will, and it beckoned him back, reminding him of his unfinished business. Her voice found him and guided him like a beacon on a distant shore. The path to reforming his physical body and fighting with his allies was clear to him then, and the call beckoned. Ivanel's fingers began to move as if not of her own accord, weaving in the air as if she was playing some unseen harp. Across the way, Quenthel similarly fell into a rhythm that surprised her consciousness. For there was a music in the air, but one of magic, not notes. They felt the power of Catti Bree, thrown out to them as Matron Malice had done to House Hanet, except to reverse effect. Where Malice had paralyzed the Hanets, Catti Bree now filtered her power into the two Baenris, lending them strength, giving them harmony, lifting their magic to heights they knew only from the memories of Ivanel the Eternal. First in Matron Mother Ivanel Baenri's own use of birth magic in the early days of Menzo Berenzon, and then a second time when Ivanel the Eternal had dropped House Oblodra into the Claw Rift. Web spewed from the fingers of the priestesses, attaching to their respective trees, climbing high and out toward each other in the highest branches, then with filaments drifting down to attach across the way. The priestesses and wizards supporting them felt the magic too, though they didn't understand it. Regardless, their energies filtered into the unknown ritual. The web grew very quickly, filling the air between the trees. So, soon after, Ivanel and Quenthel fell back to the eastern end of the meadow, the other priestesses and wizards following them. The web was there, completed but almost fully translucent, a filament here or there shining, only in those moments when the wind pushed it to align with the first rays of dawn coming into the sky behind the drow. The ground shook now continually. Matron Jindia was coming. As she fell into the fullness of the moment, her child moving from her body, the magic of the spell filling her with unbridled joy and hope, and a great sense of oneness with everything, with her fellow humans, with every sentient race, with animals, with the plants, with the stones and the water and the air itself. Catti Bree knew a level of peace she had never before imagined. more than she had known in the magical forest of Mialiki in the years when she was, in some regard, dead. This was understanding. This was beauty. This was power. For a brief flash, she wished that she still was wearing her ring. Perhaps she could quiet the primordial, perhaps even open the portals. But no, she realized just as quickly. Her understanding of the multiverse was clearer now, and she understood that Megara would not be affected by this magic, by her attempts at persuasion, by anything at all. For Megara was a wall, a literal force of nature, and no spell she might cast, even in the heightened state, would matter at all in that regard. Her mind whirled, the pain intense, but the joy sweet, so unbelievably sweet. She sensed the moment of culmination, the moment of separation, the true power of creation upon her. Distantly, she heard the dwarves, heard Kopeta, begging her to push the child out. She didn't need the encouragement. This moment beckoned to her, and she rushed to it with every ounce of strength, physical and emotional and mental, she could muster. And as the child passed into the world, Catibri threw all of that strength through the moment and out wide and far. Out to the drow allies gathered near Gontalgrim, north to Luskan and those who battled the Margaster invasion, west aiming for the ruins and the missing monk, and in the fleeting hope that there she might find a bit of Driz's spirit, to tell him at least that his child had arrived, even if he would never see the baby. In the beauty, in the pain of the moment, Catibri threw forth a magical bomb, as had Malice those centuries before, but not to assault the invaders, no. That she would not do. For all of Zacnaphane's assurances, she could not so taint this moment of love and beauty with carnage. Instead, she planted her flag, her beacon across the Northland, encouraging her allies, calling to them all, willing her thoughts and magical force to them to raise and bolster their spirits. In the west, she heard a call back, and it was from Afa Frenfir, and she reached toward the lost monk and planted in the courtyard where he had fallen that image, that moment of beauty, sticking it there like a flag of triumph that Driz might know. She was out of her body. She was in that instant as Driz had gone and Afa Frenfir had gone, lost in a flowing stream of connectedness and consciousness. Of oneness, truly, as everything was broken down before her into its tiniest elements, and they were all so similar, star stuff. There was harmony here, and eternal and universal beauty and calm that mocked the mortal concerns, that made the wars and strife of mortal beings seem stupid. The cry of a child brought her flying back into the room, to her waiting body. And she blinked open her eyes to see Kopeta holding the child. The babe was swaddled already. She could see only the head and the white hair, and the cord, still attached, hanging down from under the blanket. "Aye, lady, ye've a beauty here," she heard Kopeta say. "She looks like you, but she's her da's eyes." Catibri hardly unpacked that. Her da. Her da. She had a daughter. Her da. Driz, who would not know her. But she was okay now. For in the moment of creation, through the power of the magic, she too had crossed into that place between the living and eternity. She would never think of it as the living and the dead anymore. Driz was there. And her heart ached for her loss keenly in this moment. Particularly in this moment. But Drizzt was okay. It was okay.